Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs. That's $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome again. Booker T. Washington speak. We're so happy to have you join us tonight as we open the portals to our family room for our weekly family room forum. We want to thank everyone for taking time out of your busy spring evening to come on board, either via the internet or those of you who will be dialing in on the telephone to participate in our discussion this evening. Our topic for this evening is, should African Americans seek to receive cultural inspiration from Africa the way that Italian Americans receive cultural inspiration from their mother countries, Italy, for example, or Chinese do from China, etc.? Should African Americans seek to receive cultural inspiration from Africa the way that Italian Americans receive cultural inspiration from their mother country, Italy, or Chinese do from China? those of you who are listening via the internet, I just want to invite you to go to my Facebook page. Just put in Booker Washington Senior, Booty Washington, Senior Male Descendant. I think that's how it goes. But just put in Booty Washington Senior, and it should come up. And you'll be able to see a couple of pictures representing not the totality of the African cultures that our people came from, but in particular the Islamic culture. There's a picture of the Hausa people dressed in Islamic attires. So if you want to look and see what I'm actually referring to, then that's really what I'm referring to. I'm not referring to the what I would say jungle people, the pygmies, or some of the less developed primitive type people. You know, there's all kinds of cultures. Africa is not a nation like China is, which China wasn't always a nation either. And Italy wasn't even a nation all back in the history. It was only, I don't know the actual date, but it was only the last couple hundred years that what we call Italy became what we call a nation. Before that, it was a lot of little city-states controlled by kings and dukes. And the same thing in Italy. There's thousands of different cultures, you might say, in that big old continent. In fact, it's kind of interesting. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to bring on Mr. Bianchi, our regular panelist, and introduce him. But I just want to say that the truth of the matter is that they have a new global map that's just been released. You know, the traditional map always said that Africa was the second largest landmass, the second largest continent, and Asia was the biggest. But on this new map, that's not even true. On this new map, Africa is bigger than Asia. Now, I'm not going to say which one is right, which one is wrong, but what I am going to say is the fact that a continent can have many, many, many cultures. I mean, if you just take the small continent of Europe, and I just mentioned Italy, but you also have France, it's a totally different culture. You have Spain, that's another totally different culture. You have Germany, which is another culture. And then you have England, of course, that's a different culture from Italy. And then you have Denmark and Sweden and Finland up there, Scandinavian countries, Poland. And then you got the Eastern European countries over there on the eastern side, Hungary and Czechoslovakia. And you get further over, and then there's even more diversity. So obviously when we say cultural inspiration from Africa, we can't be talking about a homogenous culture. And the fact is that all of the people that are here in America descended from Africans are descended from a mixture of various cultures. But still, I still thought it was a good idea to talk about cultural inspiration, simply because of the fact that when I went to Africa, being a Muslim, I went to the mosque and the Muslim in Djibouti. In East Africa, where I went, had been Muslim for hundreds of years. And it was nice to sit in the mosque with all these African black people and enjoy their companionship. And I did get cultural inspiration from that experience. So you can interpret it however you want to, but I thought it'd be something good to talk about. So at this time, we want to welcome our veteran panelists. I would say senior panelists, except I think in age, I'm a little bit senior, but in terms of experience on the show, we came on the show at the same time, almost from the first program that we had. Ms. Bianchi has been right there with us going on 3 years. Boy, time flies. So, Ms. Bianchi, welcome to the show tonight. And how are you doing, sir? And can you hear me all right?
I'm doing pretty well, Mr. Washington. Happy to be in your presence. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm certainly happy to be in yours. I always enjoy our show on Saturday where we have these very vibrant, very, very vibrant and exciting to me, very wholesome conversations. And I will just mention this for the benefit of others that are listening. Y'all need to come on the show and get to know esteemed Mr. Pianica. He's a well traveler, scholar, man that has a lot of information to share. And he's kind enough to come on every Saturday night and share with you. And before I go any further, Mr. Pianica, I do want to make mention of the fact I may not have a show next Saturday. I may be on the road traveling up to Michigan. And I don't want to say right now, but just be prepared in case you dial in and say no show has been scheduled, because I'm still waiting to get confirmation from my potential host that's invited me to come up and do a book signing up in Michigan. So just want to let you know, just in case you won't think the show has been canceled. It's just that I may not plan to have it, depending on that. But anyway, I do want to mention another thing, too, and that is the fact that those of you who are listening out there in the internet land, we'd like to invite you to come on the phone. Dial in 657-383-0671. I'll repeat it in a couple more minutes to give you a minute to go ahead and put up your notebook app or whatever app on your phone where you can write the number down or get a piece of paper and a pencil. But we would like for you not just to listen, but come on, let us hear your opinion. We don't always agree on this show. As a matter of fact, I would say 95% of the time that the participants are not in agreement. But that's okay. We're still learning. And that's a good thing. We can talk and be agreeable even though we may disagree. I think that's a good thing. So you may hear something on the show that you feel is not what you want to support, but let us hear what you like, and we'll talk about it. Okay, so back to you, Mr. Piaki. You've got extensive experience in Africa. You probably can confirm some of what I just said. You probably know a whole lot more about it than I do, having traveled around, especially in West Africa. So what do you think about that?
Pardon me?
No, I was just asking you, what's your opinion about the topic? Should African-Americans seek to receive cultural inspiration from Africa the way Italian Americans receive cultural inspiration from their mother country, or Chinese do from China?
Well, you know, blacks in America, you know, there's a difference between African American and blacks in this country. But if you speak about blacks, blacks can seek that same trait either in Africa or even Europe or wherever part of their biological makeup is from. You know, we was in a high school there in University City, Missouri, and the local community of an organization had been working to try to put what's popularly known as African Senate's curriculum in the district. They weren't successful. And they wanted to have more history. In the auditorium, they had convened some classes of students and, you know, people in was raising their hand and speaking. One of the young black males that was there, a student, said that he wants to know from all sides of his history, or his biological makeup. And that's what he said. And it was also said similar in a setting in Kansas City, in the Kansas City School District. Maybe you can even read that. But Kansas City had charter schools that had cultural themes. They had Latin charter school. They had a Greek charter school. Latin, Greek. They may have had a Spanish, but I'm not. Oh, a French. They had a French charter school. And all day long, the children would try to speak the language of the theme of that school. And a young student that was interviewed made similar comment, which was quoted in the newspaper, in the Kansas City Star. So the people of privilege, and you know, in Detroit, you have in the Native American community that was there in Detroit, they had a culture themed school called Medicine Bear. And then, of course, black kids had African Senate themed schools. Then in Florida, you have blacks, African Americans, that's attending Mandarin schools, Mandarin themed schools. That being one of the societies, ethnic groups there in China. So it depends on what the person wants to do. And you know, the popular culture here in the United States is American culture. And then there's different variations of it, even amongst blacks. You say you're going up where? Are you going up to Michigan next week?
It's the plan. I'm still waiting to get confirmation from the host that's paying for my ticket. So we just have to wait till the middle of the week to see how it works out.
Well, if you and you coming out of Georgia, right?
Yes.
Well, you would notice a distinct difference in the people in Michigan, especially up around Lansing, compared to there in Atlanta. You notice in the way they go about pronouncing words, how they go to referring items, products, how they make reference to products. Even probably in the way they prepare food. Take a sweet potato pie. Up in the northern areas, black women, African-American women, make a sweet potato pie with just the bottom crust. Down south, Louisiana, blacks make a sweet potato pie with a top crust also. So like an apple pie. And same thing with pumpkin pie. So those are just in the differences between people based on the geographical areas that they was born and raised in. Sometimes they would take that with them. Heck, down in around the Baton Rouge area, I asked black people how to do certain things. How do you eat crawdads? Young man said, "You not from here?" I said, "No. Here, let me show you." I noticed that down here that the way the women wear their hair, you have one ethnic group, seemingly, their hair is a real, real rich brown and auburn. And they kind of short in stature. So I would imagine that they have a strong affiliation with France. But I haven't been able to ask the question yet. Either that or gypsies. Have you noticed that?
I haven't, but I hadn't spent a whole lot of time. You talking about down in Louisiana?
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't spent. I've been through there a few times, but I never spent enough time down there to really be able to observe too much about the culture like you have. So I don't know. I haven't really been able to see that because I haven't been down there long enough.
You don't see the type of violence amongst, now I don't know about, well, I haven't seen violence amongst, but you don't see the type of violence that you see amongst the blacks in this area as you see up there in your St. Louis and your Chicago and probably your Baltimore. Now, I understand in Jackson, Mississippi, there's a lot of violence amongst black youth. But that's just, you know, depending.
Well, I've been waiting to see if anybody else dialed in yet, and nobody has so far. I'm hoping that we have a couple or three more people, but we won't stay on much longer if we don't in the next 10 minutes. Because we can kick this around back and forth, but I would like to not actually become redundant if we have actually already heard each other.
Where's Booker T. Washington born at?
Say again?
Where was Booker T. Washington born?
Oh, he was born actually near Roanoke, Virginia, a little little plantation. I said little plantation. It wasn't one of these big, gigantic plantations in the movies, but a little plantation near Halesburg, Virginia, really, from what I've been told, near the Roanoke.
Mm. How about that? Where did he grow up at? In the same area?
Yeah. Well, sort of, but no. Actually, to be honest with you, he grew up in what's now West Virginia. It wasn't West Virginia at the time that slavery was over. His mother had married his stepfather, who had got a job over in Malden, West Virginia, which was just smaller Virginia at that time. And when he was about 9 years old, his mother took him and his brother and sister over there to set up a home in Malden, Virginia, now Malden, West Virginia. That's where he actually grew up.
Yeah, well, you know, him going down to Alabama would have been a culture experience, too. I would imagine.
It was. Yeah, it was kind of shocking, really, because, you know, he had grown up on a slave plantation,
mm-hmm.
so he was familiar with the wretched conditions of black people that were slaves, because he grew up in a cabin with no floor except the dirt, packed dirt clay, and wore rags, not necessarily rags, but what we would call down south, croaker sacks. Crocus sacks. They would make shirts out of these crocus sacks, cut out the neck, and cut out stuff for the arms to stick through. And that's what the little children would wear for clothes. So he was familiar with, you know, slavery life. But down here in Alabama, when he came down here, he said the people had become more degraded in terms of their hopes and aspirations and just the general life. Was a worse condition than he ever had any idea that he was going to run into.
Well, you still have that going on today. You just have to know how to recognize it amongst the population. And Du Bois, coming from Great Barrington, Massachusetts, his perspective would have been different. It was a culture shock for him probably when he went to Fisk University. Because I understand he had an issue on a streetcar down in that area, but, you know, it gets back to the same old saying that all these people are not the same. And they're not the same here in the United States. Not the same, in your own neighborhood compared to one other neighborhood. So if you travel to other places in the world, even though you have certain phenotypical similarities, dark skin, that don't mean that equates to kin. You know, you couldn't take nobody out of Atlanta and take them over to Senegal and go into a local restaurant and sit down and dine. It would harm them because they're not, you know, because of the bacteria that their body is not used to.
Well, I just want to mention this. You know, I've traveled extensively throughout the world. I have not actually traveled to West Africa yet, but I've been to East Africa, North Africa, and I know a lot of people from West Africa. In fact, I met more people from West Africa here in Augusta, Georgia, then I met traveling around through Africa, and that's mainly because the number of the African nations, Senegal, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, I don't think Ghana, but for the number of the African nations send their officers to this particular military base, which is a preach out there on Fridays. And so the ones that are Muslims come to my service, and I've got a chance to get to know them and know more about the culture from talking to them. In fact, each one of them normally gives me some African clothing as a souvenir. So But let me say this, because we're going to probably close in a minute. I don't see where anybody else might be coming on right quick, and I'm not going to just stay here. We can talk back
and you know, another thing, that phenomenon is not a phenomenon, it's a reality. You know, if you go to Egypt, up there in the northeast corner, northeast corner, Ethiopia, you would have the same problem. I've been with people that was in Egypt. One was Eddie George, the running back for the Tennessee Titans. He was there at that time. And a lot of the people came down with stomach ailments because of the bacteria, not only in the food, but just even the air that you breathe, because they have animals, horses, mules, donkeys, camels, and they travel up and down the streets just like the automobiles do. They have their dung droppings, which eventually dry, become dust, and you are breathing in that dust. So, and also in that country, they don't pasteurize milk. A lot of products they don't pasteurize. That's why you go to a restaurant, you cannot drink the dairy products, the cheeses, the butter, of course, the milk. Because if you do, you stand a chance of coming down with some digestive impalements that will stick with you for about a week or so. And you won't be able to go out in the public because you won't be able to get the bathrooms.
Yeah, I know from personal experience what you're talking about, Mr. Jackson, because can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Because when I was on active duty in the Navy, I was stationed on a frigate. For those of you that are listening, don't know what a frigate is. It's a warship, but it's a small warship. It's a kind of a destroyer, but smaller than a large destroyer, but it does what destroyers do. And we went to Egypt, and when we went to Egypt, we had organized tours there in Cairo. And one of the places that we went was to this outdoor restaurant. I mean, they may have had an indoor part to it, but they served us outside. And there were 80 of us on the tour. And the next day after we had gotten back, maybe that night, because I think we got back on the ship late that night, every single body was sick as a dog, as they say. And I said, I wonder what it was that got everybody sick. The water they cook with. But you mentioned another factor about bacteria being in the atmosphere. I didn't even think about that.
So, yeah, it is.
But I know. Yeah. But the other thing, too, was.
Did you see the water fountains there in the city?
I can't remember those.
You know what they are, don't you?
No. What are they?
They have a trough with several spigots coming across.
Yeah.
They will have a metal aluminum cup on a chain. You might have four or five. And people come down the street. They get a cup, turn on the water, fill it up, drink out the cup, and leave it hanging for the next person. And the next person. So they have communal cups. Think nothing of it.
Yeah, I think I might have seen something like that. That kind of rings a bell. But I want to probably close up. I think about since nobody else showed up. I think I'm going to probably close up in a minute. But I do want to get back to the original topic. I mean, you touched on it. But the thing about it, you know, I've been to San Francisco. I lived in San Francisco, actually. And so I've been to Japan Cultural Center, which is right adjacent to the black community of the Fillmore District. And I don't know, they may have gentrified the Fillmore District, so it doesn't even have black people down there now because they seemed like they were wanting to do that. But right next to the Fillmore district, when I was there, this was 40 years ago, they had started developing Japanese businesses, nice businesses, clean businesses. And then, of course, on the other side of town, you know, you go up on the other side of town, they had the Chinese, basically Chinatown, they call it. And unlike America, these people generally marry just within their own social group. But I'm just saying that those young people coming up that have Chinese background used to receive cultural encouragement, cultural inspiration from that background. Now, of course, we've been so divided from the African roots that many of us have that we don't even really know who to connect with. I happen to know from some research that was done by a scholar that I have, but I don't know anything about the people and the culture, but I was told that my family have African roots connected with the Igbos in Nigeria. And one of the Nigerian friends of mine that I have, and this was real strange, we were talking one day, and I mentioned to him, he said, yeah, I can tell you, you know, got Igbo in you. I said, I can tell that. He said, I'm looking at the shape of your head in the back. I said, really? He said, yeah, we can look at each other's heads and tell what tribe somebody comes from. I said, that's very interesting. This is an African from Nigeria said that, a scholar. He wasn't just so, you know, flim-flam man. You know, this was actually a man that had a lot of education. He said that. But my point, what I'm trying to get to is this. You know, African Americans right now, it's very hard for a lot of African Americans, even myself, and I know I got English roots in my bloodline, but it's hard for African Americans, even when we know we got those European roots, to really get the kind of cultural encouragement from those roots. But we know the reason why we got those roots is because of miscegenation that in some cases was forced on our great-great-grandmothers. So it's kind of hard to feel encouraged by that. You know,
well, you know, when the Igbo was fighting the Yoruba, you had the same thing going on.
Yeah.
A Yoruba would rape a Igbo woman or vice versa.
Yeah.
A person's head, you found a similar head shape. Now, I do have to admit that facial characteristics and shapes are distinct to some areas, like those down in South America. I seen a young lady the other day with sort of like a flat face, and some of the women are built with their butt close to the ground. Well, you know that those women come from in these equatorial areas. You know, they're stocky, close, built to the ground. I mean, that's just the way nature does to you. But you can find a similar head shape other places. You know, I mean, elongated hair. They had those in certain areas in Europe.
Yeah, I'm not making a big deal out of just saying that this particular person that mentioned that, but what I really want to close out on talking about is this whole concept of cultural inspiration to be able to encourage an ethnic population to reach back to get some type of a strength from some historical achievements or cultural reality. And that's really what I picked the topic for, to find out if we need to be doing that as African Americans.
Well, I tell you what, they try to do that with in your public schools with adding more history. I can't think of the word that they associated with it. It'll come to me in a minute. And it was supposed to do that to help, and hopefully that it would inspire children to study hard and so on and so on, but it didn't work. Blacks in America is Americans. They're not African. They're American. There's a whole lot of difference there. You know, you got Ethiopians that live in villages that's 10, 11, 12,000 feet above sea level. Well, you take somebody out of Atlanta and put them over there, it won't work very well. I mean, that's just the way nature does.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about it, I just want to make a closing statement. We'll cut it. You know, the Polish people, I won't say Polish, I don't know a lot about them, but I know the Italian people, even though they have settled, and even though you find them marrying outside of the Italian culture, but they still try to keep their daughters marrying Italian men. You know, they try. You know, find that they are not totally successful there. But they still have a connection. You know, even if they never get back to Italy, you can go into Italian neighborhoods, you can hear Italian Neapolitan music playing out some of their little cafes. You go into their little cafes and they set up just like I lived in Italy for 7 years, and you'll find a little cafe set up just like if you was in Italy. You know, they're still holding on to those cultural roots, and those cultural roots are encouraging them, and that's the point that I was making.
Well, Africans do the same. I had a guy that worked, a real good friend of mine. He's Mexican. He don't speak a lick of Spanish, none whatsoever.
Yeah.
I asked him, because we used to get tamales from this one Mexican lady. He was a cook. And I would tell him what I wanted. Tell him I wanted a dozen tamales, something like that, $6 a dozen. I think I got 5 dozen, maybe 60 of them. When we got to talking, I say, "What? You have any problem telling her what?" He said, "I don't speak Spanish," which I already do.
Yeah. Yeah, well, listen, I think we've probably exhausted the topic. I thank you so much for being so consistent about coming on and sharing your opinions with us, with me and the rest of the audience, because we do have people that just prefer to be listeners that don't come on to give their opinions. So even though I don't see the names or phone numbers of those, I don't see anybody's names, I see phone numbers, but right now I just see your phone number, but I do know.
But you know, on that question, it's nothing wrong with that if that's what people want to do. If folks want to have schools culturally themed, I still say they have to have learning going on in those environments. But if that's what they want for their children, that's perfectly fine if they want to do that.
Yeah. And actually, to be honest with you, I wasn't so much talking about the schools when I asked the question. I was just talking about in general, like parents telling their children about some history of Africa or people in Africa, or showing them pictures of way back when you had, like I put pictures on Facebook of these Hausas dressed in these beautiful, beautiful robes and so forth. And this goes all the way back to around 600 years ago, maybe longer. But I'm just saying the school thing is one specific topic we can talk about. But my idea was on a more general level than just the schools.
Well, that's how the kids learn. In Africa, traditional dance is passed on to the young kids as early as 3 years old. You see little girls and boys out there doing mapuka. Mapuka is similar to what you call twerking here in the United States. And that's how that traditional is passed on. It's passed on to the kids, the children.
Right. Well, I do know another thing. Since you're talking about dancing, most of our people, I mean African-American people, they learn how to dance at home, you know, watching their big brothers and sisters or friends of their big brothers and sisters when they come over to the house, going to little parties and watching the other kids and trying to copy them. You know, it's not really a school thing so much as it is something that happens after school But I got your point. But I do want to say this. You know, my mother was a school teacher, but I did not learn how to read when I went to kindergarten in the first grade, because my mother didn't start teaching me how to read before I even went to kindergarten. I'm not saying that's generally what the case is, but I'm just saying that, you know, she started buying me books. I don't know if you remember this set of books that came out years ago called Childcraft. Had an orange cover, and it was a set of them. I don't know, maybe about 12 books in the set, and they were about maybe an inch thick. Each book was about an inch thick, and they covered a lot of stuff. And I was in school at the time, but I learned just as much from reading those books as I learned in the classroom. And my mother did that. That didn't have anything to do with school. So I'm saying in certain cases...
Well, it depends on how it's taught, too.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, and it's not to in any way take away from what you're saying about the school, but I'm just saying there's a lot that students do learn and that they can learn about their culture heritage that doesn't have to be relegated to what's in school.
Well, in school, you have the opportunity to practice it amongst the kids that's there. Now, the thing is, it's detrimental to that. You have classrooms now in your inner city schools that's got Somalians in it. It's got Mexicans in it. It may have some Africans in it. Of course, you're going to have African Americans. And you may have one or two other different cultures. So I think you can have learning going on there with basic things, but as far as a culture experience, it's kind of disastrous. You know, among Somali culture, male teachers don't teach females, from what I understand. So in the public schools, initially that was an issue when you had a male teacher trying to teach some Somali girls in a classroom. The language. Do you speak an Arabic language?
No, I don't. I can read the Quran in Arabic, but I don't speak conversational Arabic.
All right, then. So when you hear people saying Assalamu alaikum, and they may say a few other things, Ramadan Mubarak, they are not speaking the language. They're just speaking some words.
Right.
Because to learn how to speak the language, you would have to grow up in that society and experience the uses of the language, the emphasis they put on it, when to say it, you know what I'm talking about.
Well, I was going to say this. I'm going to give you an example, something that happened to me. And I've been reading the Quran in Arabic since around 1990. And, since I read the Quran, because I'm familiar with certain words and phrases and what they mean, you know, I don't usually have to get a dictionary, Arabic English dictionary. But a lot of the words that I'm not familiar with, I may pull out my Arabic English dictionary to find out what they're talking about. But I went to, I think I was in Abu Dhabi or Dubai, one of those United Arab Emirate countries. And I was in a taxi going down the street, and I was the signs on the stores. And I could tell what the letters were, but I couldn't make out the words because they were not words that I had come across in the Quran. I wasn't familiar with the language as far as, you know, everyday Arabic was concerned. So even something simple as being able to read the signs on stores, because I didn't know the common everyday Arabic language, I couldn't make out what I was looking at. But anyway, I think we've gotten to the point now where I'm kind of ready to call it an evening. And I certainly, again, thank you, Ms. Piaga, for being so regular. And I appreciate your commentary and the knowledge that you share with us. And we'll join others again, hopefully soon. I can't say if it's going to be that Saturday coming up or next after that. But we'll get together again, just dial in and see what the situation is on next Saturday if you can. And,
okay, well, I'll talk to you later.
Take it easy. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Okay, for all of you who have been listening via the internet, you have heard back and forth me and our veteran counsel, Mr. Pianchi, who has traveled extensively in Africa and has a great deal of knowledge about African culture, African customs. You've heard his opinion. I'm going to give my opinion. Normally, I kind of hold my opinion until everybody else gives theirs. Question, should African Americans seek to receive cultural inspiration from Africa the way that Italian Americans receive cultural inspiration from their mother country, Italy, or Chinese do from China? I have this to say. I believe African Americans should learn about the best culture, the highest level of culture. There are many cultures in Africa. I'm currently reading a book, a very, very important work in terms of historical novels, but it's very well researched. And this book is called The Dahomeans. Dahomey is a country in West Africa from which a lot of people came. They were put into slavery. Many of you have heard about Benin because of the beautiful brass carvings or brass figures that the Benin people are famous for. Well, the Dahomey people also did that kind of work. In fact, according to the story, that Benin was actually part of Dahomey or vice versa, but they were actually the same general society, but you know more about Benin, I think, than you do about Dahomey. And the point is that these people back in the 1800s had some very brutal, savage type of practices. Even though they dressed up in royal robes, a lot of times they didn't wear clothes, especially the women, depending on the circumstances. If it was an important occasion, the women would cover themselves, but over, you know, there in that hot part of the world doing the regular activities, a lot of women did not wear any clothes. The men would wear something wrapped around their middle, maybe something that went down to their knees, depending again on the circumstance. But that's not the main point. They did some brutal things to each other in that particular period of time. Like, for an example, I don't want to make people feel scared, but every year, the king would sacrifice so many innocent people that just happened to have been captured in tribal battles or wars, which they would have on a regular basis, simply for the purpose of capturing people to be their slaves. And then eventually, they began to sell these slaves off to the white slave traders. Because unknown to a lot of people, the white slave traders did not have to go into the jungle and into the inland areas to capture black people to put into slavery. They didn't have to do that at all. They basically made deals with tribal leaders to get the slaves for them. And they would give the tribal leaders guns, even in the 1800s. You know, they had guns in the Civil War, so they had guns 20 years before that time as well, maybe even earlier than that. And they would give the tribal leaders guns so the tribal leaders could subdue their rivals. They were also Africans, but they belonged to another tribe. And they would capture these people, and they would either kill them or they would put them in slavery. And when the slave traders came over there, they would have them already ready to be transferred to the slave ships. See, but the thing about it is they would have sacrifices, annual sacrifices, for no other reason than they say to appease their gods. They were talking about the gods that the Christians believe in or the Muslims believe in. There was some ancestral gods or some superstitious gods that they had developed in their minds over a period of many centuries. And to appease some of these gods, they would just ritually kill a bunch of people. They would even have a ceremony where they would dress these people up. It was going to be killed like they were celebrating something, but what they were celebrating is that these people were going to be decapitated. So very brutal stuff was going on over there. And this has been documented. I'm not making it up. But that's not the kind of history And that's not the kind of inspirational story that I'm talking about that we should receive to help us to be able to be inspired. And so what I'm looking at, so some people may take issue with this because they may not understand the precepts, but I'm looking at the Islamic cultures. But I'm not talking about those Islamic cultures that still held on to those barbaric cultures, because that's one thing I found out in talking to African friends of mine, that even those countries like Sierra Leone and Gambia and Senegal that have been Islamic countries for hundreds of years, there's still a lot of that barbaric, what I would say primitive, old African, what we would call, I don't like to say savage, I don't want to say savage, but a lot of that backward stuff is still part of their culture. You know, so you'll see them dressed up in Islamic type of beautiful clothes, but then you'll see them doing some things that you say, I don't see anything in the Quran about that. I didn't hear Prophet Muhammad talking about that, but that's like over in Arabia still. A lot of people hold on to some ancient practices, pre-Islamic practices, like for a long time. They felt that women was just like property. And here recently, they just started letting women drive because they didn't want women to have a lot of freedom because they saw women almost like slaves. That's not something that really should be done in Islam, but these people were holding on to pre-Islamic ideas. So those pre-Islamic ideas that you may hear about, even in the Muslim countries in Africa, is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about those Muslims that practice Islam. Should our people receive some inspiration from those precepts that they practice? Because that is part of our genetic history. It's part of our historical record. And we need something, obviously, as African-American people, to give us some inspiration. Because I remember as I get ready to close as a child, when I was growing up in Tuskegee, Alabama, pretty much on the campus of the Tuskegee Institute, and I saw the workers in the different shops, and I saw them building homes around in the community, I was inspired with the concept that we were going to build a new, better world for our people, that these students graduating from Tuskegee were going to replace the old shotgun shacks, slave type of shacks, that many hundreds and thousands of black people lived in, because when slavery was over, most of the black people just stayed on the plantation where they turned the plantation into sharecropping farms. And the black people still continued living in the same shacks that they had been living in when they was actual slaves. And I saw many, hundreds of those growing up down in the South when I was a child. And so Booker T. Washington wanted to replace all those shacks with nice homes, the kind of beautiful home that he had built for my family. And the thing about it, I was inspired because I could see the whole world changing with that particular model being established at Tuskegee. But that didn't happen, unfortunately. And the next thing, of course, that gave me inspiration was the civil rights struggle, where a lot of the black people who were oppressed through the segregation and Jim Crow laws began to feel that the civil rights struggle led by people like Dr. Martin Luther King, he wasn't the only one. There were hundreds of prominent people. It's just that he's the one that got the attention from the press. When you get the attention from the press, like Booker T. Washington, and you become an iconic figure. And he definitely had a beautiful speaking voice. But in every community, they had a leader that was just as strong and influential in that community and had just as much power to move the people one way or the other as Martin Luther King had. But they didn't get that kind of attention. You had people like James Lowry and Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth down in that same area, Birmingham, Montgomery, and Atlanta. Very powerful men. I heard them speak personally and others. But the thing about it is that era passed. One thing that killed it was the war in Vietnam in the 60s. A lot of those young black men and women that could have made a difference were the men anyway were shipped over to Vietnam, and many of them were left there dead. But the spirit seemed to have come out of the black young people by the middle of the 70s to make those changes. And then you saw that whole, what I would say, culture of Iceberg Slim and the Players and the people that were men dressed up like they were clowns, even with platform 3-inch heels on and big old pep hats on. So all those guys that were Black Panthers after the 70s, you didn't find them anymore. They were dead in jail or they turned into Iceberg Slim. So now here we are 30 years later from that. And what do we have? We don't have any movement now. Either like we had in the early part of the 70s with the Black Power Movement or the 60s with the Civil Rights Movement. We have no movement now. And so without a movement, then you have the same thing as internal degradation and rot from within. If we're not moving forward, we're going to die or move backwards. So the question is, can we find, when we look back, something to give us encouragement to move forward? I say yes. I say we can. Because when I look at these pictures of these Muslim households, what I see is beautiful culture. I see a great, great culture that rose these black people up to where they had some of the best universities, medical schools in the history of the world. And people in places like Songhai, Mali, University of Timbuktu, and other universities. They had people from all over the known world coming there to learn the high science of medicine. And not medicine where you had to be cutting up people all the time, but medicine where you could take natural herbal remedies and cure diseases, you know, using things that could be grown out of the ground. But where is that in our culture today? Where are the people today that are even preaching about making those connections? They're not doing that in the church. So my question is, should we look at those historic, inspirational background experiences that our people had and get inspiration from them? So that's my talk. And usually, you know, those who listen regularly know I don't usually talk a long time like that on this show. I do have a show where I do talk a long time, but that's on Friday night. But we only had me and Miss Bianca tonight, and so I said I would go till 9 o'clock, and then it's that time now. So I want to fill up the rest of the time by sharing my thoughts. So if you have any thoughts on this subject, again, I would like for you to text me at air code 706-399-5006. And if I can get your commitment to come and voice your thoughts on the show, we'll have that topic again that we had tonight. The other thing I want to mention, if you will write down 706-399-5006, I would like to encourage you to buy the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. Send me a text to that number. Tell me your name and how many books you want. The books are $20 a piece plus postage and handling. Postage and handling, so you'll know in advance, so you won't be surprised. Use this $5 per book. If you buy several books, it won't cost you $5 per book. It'll be less than that. So go ahead and write that number down again, 706-399-5006. We hope you've enjoyed our program this evening. We always love bringing it to you. And we hope that you will continue to be a listener and that you will even become a participant. So good night and God bless you all.